Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with some national news stories from Public News Service in the wake of Donald Trump's win in the presidential race over Vice President Kamala Harris, including an update on House elections, President Biden's pledge for a peaceful transition of power, and how some governors, including California's, are planning to push back on Trump's plan for mass deportation of immigrants. Then, we'll have the outcomes in East County's congressional and legislative races, as well as city council and mayoral races and ballot measures in four local cities. At least two of these races are still too close to call. Then we'll have an interview with Lemon Grove Councilwoman-elect Jessica Heredia on her ideas for a better Lemon Grove. We'll also have a missing persons alert from La Mesa Police about a senior with dementia who rides the trolley, and she may have traveled elsewhere in San Diego County. Then we'll be interviewing Loveland Reservoir activist Russell Walsh and Sierra Club Conservation Chair Ron Askeland about the future of Loveland Reservoir and a meeting coming up in Alpine next Tuesday on restoring trails at Loveland. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about fun and festive events coming up in the last half of November, from our very own Roaring Twenties party to concerts, a comedy show, and holiday events across our inland region. From California News Service, hear analysis on why propositions to raise the minimum wage and support rent control failed to win passage. We'll also have fall planting tips from Master Gardener Connie Beck. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree.
President Joe Biden is promising a peaceful and orderly transfer of power following the re-election of former President Donald Trump. Speaking from the White House Thursday, Biden said the election should lay to rest any concerns about the integrity of the system, calling it honest, fair, and transparent. Republicans may have won the Senate, but control of the House hangs in the balance, with dozens of races still being counted. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he's confident his party will have the power to implement what he calls Trump's aggressive first 100-day agenda.
I genuinely believe that he could be the most consequential president of the modern era, and our Congress by extension, because we have to fix everything.
Johnson has previously suggested Republicans will eliminate the Affordable Care Act and take a blowtorch to the regulatory state. Democratic governors are vowing to fight some Trump policies, including his plan for mass deportations. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey says her state police will not be involved. California Governor Gavin Newsom has called a special session to bolster civil liberties and environmental protections. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says his state will remain an ally for all vulnerable communities.
No matter the storm that we face, Illinois will always strive to make you welcome and safe and protected.
Meanwhile, when asked on NBC how much the deportations of millions of people will cost, Trump said the plan has, quote, no price tag. Legal experts predict the judge in Trump's New York hush money case will call off his sentencing planned for later this month. Trump was convicted earlier this year of falsifying business records to cover up payments to porn star Stormy Daniels. New York Attorney General Letitia James, who also brought a civil fraud case against Trump's real estate business, says her team is braced for retribution.
We've been here before. We faced this challenge before. And we use the rule of law to fight back. And we are prepared to fight back once again.
Trump has repeatedly said he plans to fire Special Counsel Jack Smith and end the federal cases against him. Advocates of criminal justice reform in California warn the passage of a proposition aimed at retail theft will mean a sharp reduction in anti-crime initiatives. Cal State political science professor Christopher Hollenbrook says Prop 36 raises the penalties for certain drug and theft crimes, ensuring more people will end up in jail.
The more money you're spending on incarceration, the less money you're spending on other things. That is definitely an accurate assessment of Prop 36, and it seems to be one that voters decided they were okay with.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
East County's congressional incumbents, Daryl Issa and Sarah Jacobs, have won re-election easily, each with about 60% of the votes. In East County legislative races, Dr. Akilah Weber, a Democrat, is breezing to a win in the 39th State Senate District with over 61% of the votes. In the 75th Assembly District, where two Republicans were squaring off, former city councilman and conservative talk radio host Carl DeMaio has over 60% of the votes, apparently defeating Lakeside School Board member Andrew Hayes. In the 79th Assembly District, which pits two Democrats against each other vying for an open seat, educator Lachey Sharp Collins is ahead of La Mesa Councilman Colin Parent with over 52% of the vote to Parent's 47%. Four candidates are vying for two open seats at the La Mesa City Council, and the race is still too close to call as of our show taping deadline on Friday. With just over 1 million ballots counted out of the county's nearly 2 million registered voters, Lauren Cazares and Genevieve Suzuki lead with 31.4% and 30.8%, respectively, followed closely by former council member Christine Alessio at 29.62%. Fitness trainer Sean Townsend trails with about 7.2%. Just 237 votes separate Alessio and Suzuki, so this race could still flip. Cazares, a policy advisor at the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, and Suzuki, an attorney and journalist, are endorsed by the San Diego County Democratic Party. Alessio, an attorney and small business owner, had the Republican Party's endorsement, but has been a moderate on issues such as climate change in her prior term on the City Council. La Mesa voters overwhelmingly passed Measure L, extending a 3/4-cent sales tax that was set to expire by a whopping 79%. Santee Mayor John Minto has won re-election over challenger Kelly O'Brien with about 79% of the votes. Councilman Dustin Trotter is cruising to victory over Padre Dam Water Board member Augie Scalziti with 61%. Laura Cavall has also been re-elected to the council, running unopposed. Minto is a 29-year veteran of the San Diego Police Department and also has worked for the San Diego Gas and Electric Company. He has experience with the San Diego Association of Governments and the League of California Cities Board of Directors and previously served on the Metropolitan Transit System Board of Directors. Measure S, Santee's half-cent sales tax initiative to fund expansion of fire stations and firefighting personnel, is losing with 53% no and 36% yes. All three incumbent El Cajon City Council members have won re-election. Councilmembers Michelle Mitchell and Phil Ortiz ran unopposed. Councilmember Steve Goble has more than twice as many votes as his opponent, Courtney Hall. El Cajon's Measure T, to extend its earlier sales tax increase, has also won passage, with over 67% voting in favor. Lemon Grove Councilmember Allison Snow may be poised to oust incumbent Mayor Raquel Vasquez. Allison Snow currently has nearly 40% of the votes in the three-candidate race. Mayor Vasquez has 31%, and Councilmember LeBaron has just under 29%. In the city council race, where four candidates are vying for two seats, business owner and reporter Jessica Heredia remains in the lead with just under 29%. Steve Fayi, a youth sports coach, has overtaken Councilman George Gastel since election night. Fayi currently has 25.4% and Gastel 25.2%, leading by just 23 votes, so this race could flip again as more votes are tallied. Planning Commission Chair Seth Smith is in fourth place with 21%. Lemon Grove voters have voted overwhelmingly to approve a measure to raise sales taxes and improve infrastructure, including storm drains, with over 70% voting in favor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today I am just delighted to introduce our special guest, Jessica Heredia, who is winning her race for the Lemon Grove City Council. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. And by the way, some of you may know Jessica because she's been one of our reporters at East County Magazine. She's now stepped out to join the political fray here. But for those that may not be that familiar, Jessica, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. Well, I am a business owner. I own a hair salon in El Cajon. And I've done that for 26 years. And through that, I have really had to, you know, learn how to market myself and do lots of different hats in a day. And I think that a lot of those same skills will transfer over into city council. So, yeah. And then I have a daughter. She's 26. And I have a dog. His name is Ochan. He's an adorable little Pomeranian I got from the Humane Society.
There you go. Well, and you've also been very involved in the community, not only reporting for us. I know before that you had started a blog site. You were videotaping and recording all of the meetings because Lemon Grove doesn't do that. And you've been involved in some of the nonprofits around the community. Tell us about that.
Yes, I started the Women's Club. I got the chapter reopened. It closed in 1998 after lack of volunteerism and membership. And I felt that our community really needed a women's group. So I started it back up. It's called the Lemon Grove Forward Club, because we found that many people in the community wanted to join this group, because we were specifically targeting Lemon Grove, projects and, you know, and raising money to help other community, services. So, one of the things that we did is a Socktober. We just finished that up and we're going to probably have 1,000 socks and those will go directly to the unhoused here in Lemon Grove.
Very good.
And then we have, I'm in the Lions Club as well, and we do lots of wonderful things obviously there. And they specifically look to fund for eyesight and glasses, which is great.
People could donate used glasses to them to help others that are reading challenged, vision challenged, who can't afford it.
Yeah. So I love being part of these groups and I look forward to partnering with some other groups and getting more involved.
Very good. Well, it looks like there's going to be big changes coming to Lemon Grove. We'll talk about that in a minute, but it looks like there's going to be a new mayor and possibly one additional council member, plus a vacancy because one of the council members who is winning the mayoral race is there'll be a vacancy for her seat. But tell us, Jessica, about what you hope to accomplish on the council. What are your top issues or changes of any sort that you're hoping to bring to Lemon Grove?
Okay. One of the things, obviously, is the streets. I know everyone in every city, you know, the streets is such a big thing. Yeah. My focus has always been to try to address the ones that are in front of parks and schools first. Because if you go around Lemon Grove and you look at most of our schools and parks, they do have very deteriorated roads right in front of them, and it's a safety hazard. So being a mom, I think that's important. And I think that all of our community members should be protected in that way. I'd also like to see the rec center and the senior center reopened to some capacity. I realize that, you know, we're tight on funds and we have to figure out how to budget it. But I think that there are some inexpensive ways we can do to open that community center, senior center and rec center back up to the public a little bit more and get the youth off the street, get them engaged. Mm-hmm. And our seniors really need somewhere to be and social engagement as well. People don't realize that seniors, if they're isolated for a long time, you know, it doesn't bode well for their mental health, but it also comes out in their physical health as well.
Yeah. As I mentioned, it looks like there's going to be some big changes as of the sort of semifinal results. They haven't counted every provisional yet, but most of the votes are counted. And it looks like the current mayor, Raquel Vasquez, did not get reelected. There were two council members running against her, Allison Snow and Leanna LeBaron. It would appear that Allison is winning by quite a large margin. So what that means is that Allison's seat will be vacant and there'll be an opportunity for the council to either appoint someone or send it to a special election. What's your thought on how that vacancy should be filled, Jessica?
I mean, I'm going to be real honest. I personally think that a special election, just because of the fact that our tone in Lemon Grove has always been about fairness and just more not having, the elected officials' friends on certain committees and boards. And so my preference would be that. However, I know that that can be very costly,
Sure.
and that's not something that maybe Lemon Grove should focus on right at this time. I'd like to think that we could possibly come up with a neutral person in the community that perhaps, we can all agree upon, that is really just there for the best interest of the community. And then we can, that's only 2 years left on that seat. So, I mean, but that's a good a chunk of time to be able to, prove to the community if you wanted to pursue it for
There you
re-election.
go. And then it appears that Liana, did not win the mayoral race, and she was termed out. So, she will no longer be on the council. So there's yourself filling one of the two council vacancies that we know about. And then right now it is just neck and neck to see whether Councilman George Gasta will be reelected or whether Steve Fye, am I pronouncing that right? Fye, who's a youth coach, I guess. Which one of them will fill, the remaining vacancy? But do you think with so many changes that the whole dynamic of the council is going to shift, Jessica? I know a lot of people have complained that there's been a lot of tensions on the council, arguments, people suing each other even, restraining orders, but a lot of the tension, especially between, the mayor and another council member, it looks like that those people may be voted off at this point. Do you think that whoever wins that final council race, do you think that there will be sort of a restoration of civility and congeniality and working together for Lemon Grove?
Well, from what I know of all three candidates that are under me right now, they're all excellent people. So their personalities aren't aggressive in any way, and I feel like they're people that would be willing to work as a team. I hope to be a voice of working as a team. I don't want to have conflict. I personally like to I like to negotiate, and I like to debate those things and work them out and find a common ground. And I
Very
think that
good.
that's what I'd like to do with the council, or my seat in the council, is try to help bring us all into the center.
Very good. And I should mention that the council also includes Jennifer Mendoza, who still has 2 years left in her term. So there'll be at least one voice of experience left on there, maybe two, depending who wins the other race. Lemon Grove is also, I think we should maybe credit the prior council for having the foresight to put the Lemon Grove sales tax measure on the ballot. At least the majority of them voted for that. They did get some grant funding, but not enough for all of the infrastructure needs. Lemon Grove had really severe flooding during the January floods, much as a lot of communities locally did. And that sales measure is passing by an astounding, I think, almost 70% margin, last I checked. What are your thoughts, Jessica, on the passage of that and what that is going to mean? Is that going to make your jobs easier on the council to have that new source of funding, the newly added sales tax revenue to work with?
Obviously the public has spoken, and they were really overwhelmingly in favor of it, which is great. Now what we need to do is make sure we design a really good community oversight for it, and make sure that we protect those funds so that they go to the things that really kind of push us forward. I think we need to focus on our downtown and making sure we've revitalized that area, our streets, obviously. Homelessness is definitely something, and we need to focus on that in our community directly with the homeless that we have on our streets. So I'm excited to see what the community oversight, how that gets organized. And I look forward to being a part of that. Honestly, it's going to be cool.
What sorts of things does the are there restrictions on what that sales tax can be used for? What are the parameters for that?
Was a very large list of things that they put on the ballot, so I'm not exactly sure, but I would like to narrow it down a little bit into infrastructure. We're very far behind on infrastructure, so we need to put a large portion of that aside. And get that tackled. And then, you know, obviously we need some stuff that I think the community is lacking in, again, that revitalize and stuff. So I'm just excited to see, you know, what we can do because, you know, sky's the limit. And we don't really know how much revenue that'll bring us. They're estimating, I believe, 5.9 million extra revenue a year.
That's just a lot.
Like, yeah.
What is the city's, what's the city's total budget per year right now?
I think it's like 18 million is the total budget.
Well, that's a lot. So 5 million, that would be increasing it by over a third, you know, almost a quarter, over a third, you know.
Yeah.
So
70% of our budget goes to like fire and police. So it'll help free up a little extra revenue for some of the fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That is great. What are your thoughts about how to address the homelessness problem? There are over 200 unhoused residents in El Cajon, in Lemon Grove. And, you know, I know you've been involved with some of the outreach or gone along with Teresa, as I have, and seen, you know, kind of the plight of these folks. And yet there's been controversies where, you know, there's been a lot of pushback against things like tiny homes or safe parking or some of the things that have been, you know, proposed at the county level in Lemon Grove. What are your thoughts on, you know, what do you believe the top priority should be for the Lemon Grove Council when it comes to tackling the homelessness crisis?
Well, first thing I think we need to do is really sit down and make a new comprehensive plan on what we can do in Lemon Grove. I think, you know, as we know, all the East County cities are trying to pull together to create a plan. But some of the cities are much larger than others. Ours is, you know, a little over 3.5 miles square feet or square miles. And so we don't have a lot of land use for things such as the sleeping cabins that they're proposing. The land that that's on is Caltrans owned, but it's right next to a brand new first of its kind early educational center. And I'd hate to, it's 1500 feet. And so that's, you know, just too close for me for that. It's also across the street from a liquor store, which is problematic. But I do think that we have a couple spots where we could do great safe parking. I think underneath our LED billboard is just sitting there, just flat land. It's perfect for it. It's not against residential so much, and it does have access to the trolley and all services. The other place would be at the Health and Human Services building. They have a huge parking lot that's very underused. And I don't know, you know, the city would have to find out, you know, how to negotiate with those. I believe the city owns the land under the sign, but I'm not 100% sure.
Interesting.
And the HHS building, I'm sure there's a landlord involved or perhaps the state or county, I'm sorry, county owns it, but I'm not certain on that either. So those are two areas I see we could do something that would be adequate for our size community.
I wonder about housing. And I know Steve Smith, who was the fourth candidate running, who it looks like is finishing in fourth currently, but he is the head of the planning commission for the city, and he had a lot of ideas about, you know, maybe streamlining the permitting process like LaMesa just did to make it a little bit easier for people to build things like new housing, especially affordable housing. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. And we should say, again, kudos to the city. They're actually the only one, I think, in the state of California that's actually met their, you know, housing mandate or affordable housing mandate for, so they have actually done a lot already. But what do you think going forward?
I think we definitely could rezone some areas and change some of the zoning so that we could have multi-use. I like that for our village a little bit, where we could still keep a lot of commercial or business revenues, you know, coming through the city because sales tax is our number one revenue. We want to increase our businesses, but we do want to have that, you know, very walkable, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to live in that kind of environment where it's, you know, businesses down below and housing up above, and they can just walk out and have lunch. And, you know, that's where I'd like to see Lemon Grove go. So we have to rezone a little bit, rechange our zoning, because our zoning plan has not been updated in probably at least 20, 30 years.
Like George mentioned. Council for decades.
So that's one of my first priorities. I know that it also is expensive and time consuming, but I think it's important. It's an investment into our city and into our future. And we're letting projects come in that we can't control our vision for our city. And I think if we rezone, you know, change some of the zoning, kind of fine tune what we think our vision is as a whole, you know, we can do some really good stuff in housing.
I wonder too about what your vision is for the types of new businesses you might like to see come in, and what your thoughts are about how to retain the businesses we have. I'm thinking of, things like a great coffee shop that everybody loved, and they kind of got driven out because they got in trouble for, I guess, having live music without a permit for it, or something, like one guy playing a guitar sometimes at a community gathering, But what do you think needs to be done to help it make it a little more attractive for businesses to stay in Lemon Grove, and what types of businesses would you hope to attract to Lemon Grove, especially the downtown area?
Absolutely. I definitely would like to see a group of some type of retail boutique, maybe shopping. I like Downtown La Mesa does have some cute little clothing stores that are a little bit they're youthful, but not so youthful that like you and I couldn't shop there, right? But
Yeah,
they're
exactly. I
hip, they're
do shop
cool. Yeah,
there.
exactly. They're hip, they're cool. And then I love the fact in La Mesa and other villages where you can just walk out and there's lots of really fine dining, not necessarily high-end dining, but just good food, and you can hear the clanging of the dishes and all that. I'd like attract more of that into the village area there on the main drag. I definitely want to see mostly as many sales tax revenues businesses as we could get in there. But we do need services because we're going to attract more residents as time goes on. And so you still need hair salons and you still need your mechanics and those things. But again, I'd like to change some of the zoning so that like the mechanics aren't necessarily so close to the village. And they're a
Good
little bit
job.
more, it not move the ones that are there, obviously, but I'd like to make that village a little bigger and in
Yeah.
fact.
You know what's going on with pharmacies? I had an email from a resident in Lemon Grove who said they just lost their last pharmacy. They used to have three, and if she's right about that, there's only, well, there's none left now. Do you know what, you happen to know what's going on with that?
I do know we're losing a pharmacy we've had for I think 30 or 40 years over there, Broadway Pharmacy, I think it's called. And it is part of the Raising Cane's car wash project that's going on. So they're vacating that property. And then we did lose our Rite Aid, as many people did.
Yeah, I think a Walgreens.
Yeah, we have a Walgreens and we do have a CVS. I believe
Okay, so
we
there's
have a
still.
pharmacy, but I'm not 100% on that.
Okay, so maybe it's a not a non-issue then. What else would, what about, community activities, festivities? They always do the holiday bonfire. I mean, do you have any ideas for anything else that you think Lemon Grove should be doing to benefit the community and its residents?
Yeah, I would love to have like a lowrider car show here. I think it would be, it just fits with Lemon Grove. I mean, we have a lot of lowriders in Lemon Grove, classic cars, whatever. I think that's one of those things that draws people into a community. And I'd like to see that on our in our village on Broadway, and really kind of start getting some action out there. I think we need bodies, and I know that the Revitalized Broadway group that's just forming, that's one of their goals is to get people to walk their dog down there and those kinds of things. So if we had something like a big farmers market or a car show or something like that, I think that would really engage not only
Oh,
our
yeah.
community but bring
Farmers
our
market would
neighbors
be good. I mean, a
close
few
too.
years ago, they had a Zest Fest or Citrus Fest or something like that. Maybe that could become an
Are you
ongoing
there?
thing. Jessica, what else would you like our audience to know that I haven't asked you?
Well, I have been recording the city council meetings for the last 3 years, and I just want to let the public know, rest assured, I still have your back. I will show up a little earlier to the meetings, and I need to be there to set up my equipment, press record. I'll go sit at my chair at the dais, and then after the meeting is over, I'll pack my equipment up just like I normally do, and I'll still put it on the YouTube channel and live stream it.
Wonderful. Well, we'll definitely be linking to that so people will be able to watch that on our site. And we certainly, I think I can speak for all our readers in Lemon Grove that we appreciate you doing that very much. I want to wish you good luck in your efforts as the new Lemon Grove City Councilwoman, and we look forward to many more conversations in the future going forward.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again for having me, Miriam.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The La Mesa Police Department is asking public help to locate 71-year-old Vivian Crowder, who has been missing for more than a week. Mrs. Crowder was last seen outside a salon in La Mesa around 10:30 in the morning on Tuesday, October 29th, although there are unconfirmed sightings elsewhere. Mrs. Crowder suffers from dementia and does not have her medication with her. She was last seen wearing a beige head wrap, blue denim jacket, blue and brown floral shirt, black stretch pants with rhinestones, and turquoise shoes. She is African American. Community members are encouraged to call 911 immediately if they believe they see Mrs. Crowder and avoid contacting her directly. Given her health condition, she may be confused and startled if contacted by a stranger. For any tips or information or past sightings of Mrs. Crowder, or to share information with investigators, La Mesa Police Department has set up a tip line at 619-667-7537. They have received reports and reviewed video indicating Mrs. Crowder walked away eastbound from La Mesa Boulevard after crossing over Spring Street around 11 o'clock on October 29th. Just before that, she was seen on camera walking east from another location on La Mesa Boulevard. There's also been a reported sighting of her at the Sprouts grocery store in Lemon Grove later that afternoon, and another reported sighting near the IHOP restaurant on Balboa Avenue in San Diego on November 6th, although investigators have not been able to find evidence to confirm that she was at those locations. Mrs. Crowder is familiar with the MTS trolley system and is a longtime resident of San Diego. She has lived at several residences along the Imperial Avenue corridor, including residents in the neighborhoods of Emerald Hills and Mountain View, and is not familiar with the La Mesa area. Again, that tip line, if you see her or have any information, is 619-667-7537. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I have two very special guests. We're going to be talking about the issues at Loveland Reservoir. I am here with Russell Walsh, who's been a longtime advocate for restoring recreational access at Loveland, and Ron Askeland, chair of the Sierra Club's Conservation and Zero Waste Subcommittee and the Sierra Club's State Conservation Committee. So welcome both of you to the show, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Miriam.
So, Russell, I understand there is a very important meeting scheduled for next Tuesday out in Alpine. It's a Loveland Trails Improvement Meeting that Sweetwater Water District is holding. And can you tell us a little bit about that meeting and what people might expect and why it's important for people to attend?
Honestly, it's very important for people to attend and see that if we can make improvements on what we left off with at the last meeting and make sure that those things aren't set in stone, the decisions that were made. And actually, some of the decisions were made after the last meeting and that we had really not vetted very well and not seen very well in the process. So, hopefully we can redo both some individual projects that we're going to keep and then maybe reallocate some of the funds to a better project. And the meeting's real close. I don't think that's on Sweetwater's agenda. Ron and I talked about it at the lake, but we're hoping that, you know, maybe some alignments on some of these projects can happen. And my public record search shows that Sweetwater Authority is really not that far down the road on any commitment to spending any of this money. So
interesting.
Let's see if we can work as a group and, constructively and hear what Mr. Askeland has brought to the table with environmental concerns.
I want to jump in and mention when and where the meeting is. It's Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and it will be at the Alpine Women's Club, which is located right on Alpine Boulevard there. And we'll have the details up on our site at eastcountymagazine.org later today. As background for listeners that may not be aware of the history here, about 2 years ago, Sweetwater drained Loveland to Deadpool status for the first time in its history. They cited the drought as their reason or excuse for that, but it was quite devastating. It basically killed off all or nearly all of the fish, and it left a fishing dock, on dry land, basically. And then when a big storm did come along, it devastated the fishing dock, tore it apart, and created major, major erosion that has taken away a lot of the access to the lake for recreational users, even now that rains have come and have largely refilled the reservoir. Did I get that pretty much right? Is there anything you want to add, Russell?
It's very full. It's up in the upper 90% still. So it's really looking really good.
Great. So, Ron, I'd like to bring you into this a little bit. Tell me how the Sierra Club came to be involved with this and what your concerns are at Loveland.
Okay. So I'm Ron Askin. I'm actually the conservation chair of the San Diego Sierra Club.
Okay.
And, my predecessor, George Corser, has been involved with this for quite a while. Unfortunately, George passed away a few years ago. But Russell had spoken to our conservation committee a couple of times over the past several years, and we've gotten more involved recently. I was able to meet with Carlos Quintero, the general manager of Sweetwater Authority, a week ago today, and really trying to talk about how we can collaborate so that we have great recreational activities, but also species preservation, especially in Sweetwater River as it flows down from the Loveland Reservoir.
Yeah, what are the species at most risk right now? And do you think Sweetwater has done enough to protect them?
Well, I think, the two most important ones I'm aware of are the southwestern pond turtle and the Ario toad.
Yeah.
So both of these are pretty limited in their habitat. And so we really want to try and preserve habitat for those two species of concern.
Very good. What about the fish that were, like I say, mostly killed off? I guess there's some of them, there were some eggs that hatched out and apparently some new fish. But do you think more needs to be done to restore the fish that were formerly there, all of the species that were in that lake before?
Yeah, I mean, Sierra Club's looking for this balance, right? We want to see recreational opportunities. It was really good to meet with Russell at the reservoir a couple of weeks ago and talk to people that were fishing there and hear their concerns. I think we'd like to have it be a good experience for people that fish and also really try and maintain good habitat for wildlife.
Great. I do want to mention that there is also a group called Friends of Loveland Reservoir, a nonprofit. They're also urging people to attend Tuesday's meeting and let their voices be heard. They're specifically suggesting people ask about the status of the floating dock replacement and trail improvement progress, especially expansion of the trail to maximize shoreline accessibility and a lookout. I would like to ask each of you if you agree on those priorities or if you think priorities for some of the grant funding that's come through from the state should be used any differently.
I would like to say if that's the way they're phrasing access, greater access around the trails, I'm in agreement with that. And it would sound like we're working together more than we were a few months ago when we had the last meeting, because that what really happened at that meeting was that the money is getting spent in a very constrained area. And this is something that Ron and I talked about at the lake, and I have some graphics that I made up. It's getting
I saw that. It did look like it was a fairly small area where they were focusing.
Right. And it's
efforts.
It's really not necessary. And there's so much more benefit to come from listening to what the anglers want versus listening to maybe more convenient ways to spend the money if that's the problem. I don't want to say what the problem is.
Yeah. But it may be a matter of there's not enough money to do everything everywhere. So they're focusing it where they can. I don't know that.
Yeah. If Friends of Loveland Reservoir is talking about expanding it though, I would like Ron and myself and some other actual lake users, because amongst us, I'm actually the only lake user, like frequent historical 20-year lake user. And so as Ron saw, the lake users echo me. And so I'm not trying to grab attention or something. I'm trying to grab ears for the actual lake users. So if what they're saying is expanding access, then that sounds better. And I did ask them to maybe concede and cooperate with expanding from what we came up with in the last meeting and after the last meeting.
Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
It was really interesting. So I just talked about a half dozen people. I was there 2 weeks ago, and it's a pretty consistent theme. We'd like greater access, sunrise to sunset. One of the folks was talking about he works up in Escondido, and it's very hard to get back to do fishing in time before they close it at 5 p.m. And some of these people are actually, they're not just fishing for recreation, they're fishing for food. So you really want to support that.
It's important, and we should note it's the only lake in the county, from what I understand, where fishing at is free. So for low-income folks, that's particularly important, those who fish for food or need the recreational access. I know that there's been some outreach to legislators at the state level. Brian Jones did succeed in bringing in at least some grant funding. And the county has also shown some interest. For those not familiar with this, there's been an ongoing tussle involving the Forest Service, where there was an easement to trade some land, and in exchange, the forest, in exchange, Sweetwater was supposed to provide dawn to dusk access, but they've quit doing that, and yet the Forest Service doesn't seem to be willing to enforce that. So there's been some talk about whether maybe eventually the county might want to take over, management of that. What's the latest on that? Are we hearing any positive signs coming out of the supervisors?
Have you met with the county yet, Ron, or the Forest Service, or any of
No, I
these
haven't.
people? Okay, so I'll speak to that, and I think this is all going to come on as and kind of a rush for Ron, and I'm so glad to have him in
Yeah.
this mode. And we actually have another meeting today with USGS, a high-ranking
Great.
USGS official, to talk about the protected species that we're concerned about and how the minimum pool best is probably the best protection for both sides of the dam, for the public trust recreation, for the wildlife on the lake side of the dam, and for the wildlife downstream. And so some of those things get worked out. But we if we have a partner after our meeting today, or the suggestion that we might have a partner, some of that Forest Service stuff and congressional standing down might move a little bit differently than it has been, if it isn't already. And so
Encouraging.
yeah, this is encouraging. A lot of really encouraging things are going on right now.
Yeah,
And
they did get insurance money to rebuild the dock, I understand, the floating fishing dock. So they may not have lots of fish yet, but at least there's a fishing dock coming
yeah,
back.
and they hadn't committed to leaving the fishing dock in the water. I mean, leaving water under the fishing dock yet. And so I
It's
think we're going to
concerned
get
whether they can get anything.
resolution, and it's just going to take time, and it's going to take collaboration amongst our advocate groups and
Yeah.
individuals.
Well, it's certainly, in preserving places that are important to the public, we've certainly seen a history in East County of sometimes it may seem to get off to a slow start, but as momentum builds and more groups get involved, things change. You mentioned George Corser. I remember him some years ago when folks out in Potrero were fighting against Blackwater wanting to open a paramilitary training camp in the middle of the national forest, surrounded by national forest out there or adjacent to it. And, all seemed kind of bleak. And I remember the Sierra Club getting involved and leading a march through the forest to save it. And not long after that, Blackwater announced plans to pull out. So, things can happen. People's voices can be heard. And sometimes mountains can be moved, metaphorically speaking, and species saved. So, I want to ask each of you what else you would like our listeners to know that I haven't specifically asked about.
Well, I think one thing is just how beautiful Lake the reservoir is. It's just a really beautiful area. It was fun to hike around a little bit, and just the scenery is wonderful. And the terrain is steep in some places. And so, trying to get access in that steep terrain is a interesting challenge. But it's just a wonderful, beautiful place.
It is. Yeah, it is.
On
Gorgeous.
that question, I'm sorry. On that question, I'd go back a little bit to the county's involvement. I do have a meeting coming with Supervisor Anderson's wonderful chief of staff in a few weeks, but I've also met at the lake, met at the lake, but about the lake with trails guru Lizzie Bendrick for the County of San Diego. And we talked about opening up a parking lot, and the county doesn't have a problem opening up this additional parking lot.
Very nice.
The Sierra Club's letter of support was sent to the county. And so, but as far as them actually taking over, maybe a good idea. It will bring fees for sure. The county's not going to have a non-fee place for very long, I don't think, unless it's some kind of MOU with Sweetwater Authority or something.
Well,
But they're looking at things.
right. And what we've seen with the county is they've been pretty smart about figuring out ways to get revenues out of other reservoirs that they operate with. Maybe they've brought in, cabins or, canoeing or other kinds of, not too invasive things, but things that would bring in some revenues, campgrounds, things like that. So, who knows what they might come up with for Loveland, but
I know they liked the idea when we presented our community crowdsourced document. One of the things we wanted to look at was a park in an area where cars can actually get to the road. And not a big park, but mostly for disabled people to solve the disabled problem or ADA problem.
There you
And by
go.
solving that ADA problem, you also make the lake easier, more easily accessible to all people of all physical abilities, the
Good
shoreline.
point.
And so the ADA stays, they even move the fishing pier down to this location. I've asked Mr. Quintero to move the fishing pier down to where ADA qualifying people could get to the fishing pier.
There are a lot of disabled veterans in San Diego County too.
Sure. And what
So
we actually called it Veterans Park,
there you go.
just to sell it, partly, honestly, partly to sell it and help veterans, because but
Yeah, they
anyone with a priority ADA need fits.
absolutely. They could do ranger-led activities potentially. A lot of the parks, they'll do ranger-led hikes or talks or, nature presentations, things like that. Anyway, once again, I want to remind everybody, if you tuned in late, we are speaking with Russell Walsh, an advocate for Loveland Reservoir, and with Ron Askeland with the Askeland with the San Diego County Sierra Club. There is a community workshop coming up on Loveland Trail improvements. This is an update that's being provided by the Sweetwater Water Authority, and it will be on Tuesday, November 12th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club. The address is 2156 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. And if you care about Loveland Reservoir, this is your chance to come out and have your voice heard, folks. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? I appreciate both of you coming on the show.
Thank
Sure,
you.
Matt. Yeah, thank you very much.
You are welcome. Thanks so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, highlighting events coming up in the last half of November. The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce will host its annual Valor Awards Luncheon honoring local veterans. The event will be held at the Hamul Casino's rooftop venue on November 14th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. For tickets, you can visit eastcountychamber.org. East County Magazine invites you to our own Roaring Twenties party on November 17th at 6 p.m. at La Mesa Wine Works. Advance registration is required. Don your best flapper, Gatsby, gangster, or cocktail attire to enjoy an evening that harkens back to the era of speakeasies and the jazz age. Savor award-winning wines, a feast from Cupid's Catering, live jazz music by the Joseph Luna Duo, and a raffle with prizes, all to benefit local nonprofit award-winning journalism and our wildfire alerts. For tickets and details, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org. Poway Symphony Orchestra will open its 21st concert season with a trip to Spain with the Romeros, presenting a program of lively Spanish-inspired music and world-renowned Romeros guitar quartet. The concert will take place Sunday, November 17th at 4 p.m. at the Poway Center for Performing Arts. The Romeros will be joining the Poway Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Joaquin Rodrigo's Concierto Andaluz for four guitars and orchestra, which was written specifically for the Romeros. For tickets and details, visit poweysymphonyorchestra.org. Sequan Casino offers Sequan Haha, a night of comedy, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. Comedians featured include Mia Jackson, a stand-up comic who opened for Amy Schumer's national tour and has hosted comedy specials on MGM and Comedy Central. Also performing is Brian King, a stand-up comedian from Georgia who regularly performs at venues there and at comedy festivals. Find details at sequan.com. Santee hosts its holiday tree lighting Friday, November 22nd from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Santee Trolley Square. This event features sledding, live music, face painting, and photos with Santa, with the tree lighting at 6:15. Find details at cityofsanteeca.gov. The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday seasons Fridays and Saturdays, November 29th through December 21st at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Campo Depot. Trains depart Fridays and Saturdays at 5 and 7 p.m. Arrive at least 30 minutes early to get tickets, explore a holiday gift shop, and soak up the festive atmosphere. Once aboard the North Pole Limited, a Jolly Elf crew will entertain you with holiday sing-alongs, festive stories, and delicious hot chocolate and cookies. As the train winds through the backcountry, keep your eyes peeled for the North Pole, where the train will pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus. For tickets, visit psrm.org. That's the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. Julian holds its annual Country Christmas Tree Lighting Celebration November 30th from noon to 8 p.m. at the Julian Town Square. The event features craft booths, vendors, live music all day, a Christmas market, tree lighting, and Santa Claus meet and greet starting at 6. For details, visit the Julian Country Christmas page on Facebook. Kick off the holiday season at El Cajon's Holiday Lights on Main, hosted by the downtown businesses on Saturday, November 30th from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., featuring festive fun for the whole family with amusement rides, an ice skating rink, cookie decorating station, live music, and photos with Santa in the lobby of the Courtyard Marriott. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
California political analysts say inflation and voter confusion contributed to the failure of propositions to raise the minimum wage and allow stronger rent control. Proposition 33 would have allowed local governments to pass strict new rent control ordinances. Professor Christian Gross at the University of Southern California's Dornsife College and Price School of Public Policy says voters may have found the measure to be overly complex.
We did some polling on this back in September. And we found a lot of people were undecided. So I think it's a confusing initiative for a lot of voters. And so often when people aren't certain what the effects are going to be, they'll just vote no.
Opponents of Prop 33 argued that more rent control would discourage construction of new rental units, thus thwarting attempts to increase the supply of housing. Proposition 32 would have raised the minimum wage to $18 an hour for companies that have 26 or more employees, and to $17 an hour for smaller companies. Gross says the defeat is surprising, as California recently raised the minimum wage, but only for fast food workers.
I think with inflation, there's some concerns about raising the minimum wage will then lead to increased costs. So people who traditionally would support minimum wage maybe are opposed. There have been increases in minimum wage, so that might have been in the back of people's minds as well.
Opponents of Prop 32 warned it would have hurt California businesses and led to an increase in the cost of goods and services. Keely O'Brien with the Western Center on Law and Poverty says Prop 32 would have helped the working poor at a time when poverty is the highest it has been in years.
In early 2023, 31% of California residents were either poor or near poor, and nearly 76% of poor Californians lived in families with at least one working adult. They're often working really hard, and they still don't have the resources that they need.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. Hi,
This is Connie again, and I'm talking to you about what you should be thinking about planting now. And in another couple of weeks, you better not be thinking about it. You better be doing it. So what do we start with in the fall? You think green. Think of all those greens that you love to eat, because this is the time to get them in the ground. Asian greens, mustard greens, spinach, and my favorite, beet greens. Except you get a double payoff with beets. In fact, you get about a 5 or 6 payoff with beets, because every little beet seed that you are planting actually is an old dried up flower, and it contains 5 or 6 seeds in it. So when those beets come up, you've probably wondered in the past, why, if I only planted one beet there, do I have 5 little plants there? What you can do is wait until they get to be about 2 inches tall, and then using your very most delicate touch, wet the soil and carefully, using your fingers on the leaves, pull out those extras. Leave the biggest one in place, pull the others, and immediately replant them 3 or 4 inches away from the mother plant, or start another row, but get them a ways away from each other so that they will each have room to grow. As they grow, you can enjoy pulling off an occasional big leaf and stir-frying it or cooking it up, braising it in a pan. They're my favorite greens, like I said. Eventually, much later, you will end up with full-grown beet roots that you can pull out and cook. So now's the time to start your beets. What else can you start now? Broccoli, everything in the cabbage family, kale plants. Pull the old ones from last year that are dried up over the summer. Get some new kale going. You can start cilantro now, and you will have to replant it again in about 2 months, because cilantro doesn't last forever. It goes to flower too soon. But at this time of year, with the cooler days and nights, it takes longer for it to bolt into flower. So cilantro is a great thing to grow right now. Right now, I just started my peas. I use Chinese edible pod peas, but any kind of peas can be started now. What you want to do is soak those seeds overnight or even for 48 hours and then plant them. Poke them into wet soil, get them down about 1 inch or so, 1.5 inches, cover them well. And I want to mention, when all these seeds that you plant, the smaller the seed, the closer to the surface you plant it, and always press down hard. Annie's Annuals up in Richmond is run by a delightful woman who talks about how she started her first batch of annual plants. She planted them outdoors in flats. The seed flats were right there. She was so upset because her cat ran across the seed flats when she was through planting them. What happened was those were the only seeds that came up. So that was a lesson to her, and it's a lesson to all of us. Press down on the soil after your seeds are in the ground so you have good contact as well as the moisture, so things will start early. You can grow radishes year-round. You can start scallions and green onions right now. Swiss chard, I would suggest that you get that in the ground right away, hopefully by the 1st of October, because Swiss chard likes the warm soil to start. In fact, all of these seeds like the warm soil to start, and then they appreciate the cooler days as they grow and get larger.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests.
We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.